New year, new kitchen. Kitchen Tune-Up has 5 ways to help you love your kitchen again. Call 810-488-9778 to schedule a safe, free consultation or visit kitchentuneup.com.
All right, 9:41 on this Thursday morning. We all know the First Amendment protects the freedom of speech, religion, and the press, but that's become really complicated because the way in which so many of us now communicate is through social media platforms that are owned by private companies. So can they kick you off for something that you say? Joining us right now to sort through what freedom of speech really means, the author of the book, The Fight for Free Speech, 10 Cases That Define Our First Amendment Freedoms, the legal counsel for ABC News, professor of media law at Brooklyn College, Ian Rosenberg. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Paul. Thanks for having me on the show.
And thanks for joining us, because this is fascinating stuff. I feel like the First Amendment, has, as simple as it is, has become more and more complicated, hasn't it?
Well, that's right. You know, there's not that many words in the text, but it's something that Americans feel passionately about, but don't really have a place to turn to learn more about their free speech rights. And so that's why I wrote the new book, The Fight for Free Speech. It's a user's guide to understanding your free speech freedoms, and it explains the rights we have and the stories behind each of those rights and who fought for them.
Well, and there's so much in the headlines. Even just today, the Australian government is speaking out about Facebook's decision to block users in Australia from all news content. They say this is ridiculous. Why did Facebook do this, and can they do that?
Well, I think it's important to remember that in First Amendment law, private companies are generally not required to follow the First Amendment. So remember, the text says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. That's been interpreted to mean both the federal government as well as the state government and government actors. But private companies like Facebook or Twitter or YouTube, what have you, they all can restrict people's speech however they want, even deplatforming the President of the United States, editing content, choosing to pick some advertisers over others. None of these are going to be found unconstitutional violations of the First Amendment. They have the right as private businesses to control the speech of people on their platform.
And I guess if people don't like it, they can start a new platform, and that has been attempted, and the places where that platform is distributed are shutting them down. So, again, it just becomes complicated and messy, but none of it is necessarily against the intent of the law, is it?
Well, that's right. And you know, Europe and Australia and other places have different models. You know, Angela Merkel had criticized Twitter's decision to deplatform the former president and said that private companies shouldn't be able to do it, that the government should do it. But in The Fight for Free Speech, I explain how that is not our constitutional tradition, and that is not how the current court would view our First Amendment rights in that regard. So, you know, just because something, though, is not protected by the First Amendment doesn't mean that we have to give up. One of the things I want people to be able to do after reading The Fight for Free Speech is to be able to advocate for free speech rights on a grassroots level, but sometimes the First Amendment is not the right tool. So in Chapter 10 of my book, I explain why the court is going to be extraordinarily reluctant to impose any type of restrictions on private companies, even when they deplatform or edit other people's speech.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly we adapted to social media and view it as more of a a necessity to day-to-day life. Not to harp on the Australian government, but they say that this is even, endangering its residents because they can't get important information, health information, and others from government. But as you rightly point out, these are private companies. They can do what they want.
Yes, and that's actually the right of individuals to be on social media platforms is, in fact, the case I described. The Supreme Court's most recent, in Chapter 10 of my book, the Supreme Court's most recent and only significant discussion of free speech rights online on social media is a case called Packingham. And in that case, the court said that even convicted sex offenders could not be restricted from overall access to all social media platforms by a North Carolina law. Because, as you say, today online speech, social media speech is a vital component of individual right to free speech. But the distinction there that I point out in the fight for free speech is that that was a state law prohibiting people from accessing all social media platforms, not a choice by the individual platforms based on user content.
We're talking with Ian Rosenberg. His book is The Fight for Free Speech, 10 Cases That Define Our First Amendment Freedoms. I wish we had more time. We could go through each of these cases. I want to talk, though, about the free speech issue that just came to a conclusion in the U.S. Senate last week with the acquittal of former President Donald Trump. And really at issue was, did he incite his followers who came to hear him speak in Washington, D.C., did he incite them to violence? And the Senate acquitted the former president, so they believe that, no, he did not incite that violence. What's your take on what happened on January 6th at the Capitol?
Well, it's interesting. When I wrote The Fight for Free Speech, I had no idea that what begins my chapter one, which is Madonna speaking at the Women's March in 2017, talking about how she had thought about blowing up the White House, would become part of the president's impeachment defense. Of course, I didn't know that there was a second impeachment trial at the time I wrote it in the work. But what's important to note is a couple of things. One, that incitement and the limits on incitement are First Amendment defenses to criminal charges. So we have to remember that the impeachment involved high crimes and misdemeanors. It wasn't limited to criminal charges. And so actually a First Amendment defense was entirely inappropriate. Second, even if there had been criminal charges, there is a limit to advocating for illegal action. And that test, which I explain, is called the Brandenburg test. And in it, it means that you cannot advocate illegal action if you are directing that speech to cause imminent likely violence, and if you it is likely that that violence is going to occur. So there has to be direction and a likelihood of imminent violence in order for your speech rights to be limited. In Madonna's case, in her next breath, she said, but I know we need to choose love over hate, and there was no violence at all at that Women's March. In former President Trump's circumstance, we obviously know that the violence happened, and I think there's a strong argument to be made that it was directed by the president for that violence to occur. So the First Amendment is really a red herring in terms of the recent impeachment.
Interesting. Is the First Amendment, the rights of the First Amendment, in jeopardy right now?
I think it absolutely is. I think that one of the greatest threats to free speech rights is that over the last 4 years, we've had a demonization of the press and being told that the press is the enemy of the people. So I've worked for the mainstream media. I'm not objective, but I do have a firsthand seat at seeing how hard journalists work to get the facts right. And I try and deconstruct the myth that the media can lie and get away with it. In one of my chapters in the book, I explain how that's not the libel standard, how we have civil rights defendants, including Dr. King, to thank for our current protections of the press, and how really we should be defending the press as a bulwark in defending our democracy. And I think people have a greater understanding of why that's so important if they read The Fight for Free Speech.
Yeah, it's like I said, simple in its text. There's not a lot of verbiage to the First Amendment, but boy, is it complicated at times, isn't it?
It is, but also I think that's because so few people have other places to turn. You don't want to have to go to law school. There's so many textbooks about it, but they're really just for students. There's a lot of books where people will say, this is my take on the First Amendment, but I think The Fight for Free Speech is really a unique book that says, here is what the law is, and here's how it applies to 10 recent controversies, giving you the answers and the tools you need to understand your free speech rights and to go forward and advocate for them.
Yeah, something we should all be very aware of. Ian, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.